This podcast is sponsored by Q Interactive, Pearson's iPad-based system for testing, scoring, and reporting. Experience unheard-of efficiency and client engagement with 20 of their top tests delivered digitally. Sign up for your free 30-day trial at pearsonclinical.com/speechscience or call 1-800-627-7271 and use promo code SPEECHSCIENCE for 10% off your new Q Interactive license. Offer valid until December 31st, 2018.
Please listen carefully.
What is communication?
The act of taking a thought from my head and putting it into your head.
Essential behavior of life. We have the both blessing and responsibility of trying to foster
it. It's the strongest way for two people to convey information to each
other. What I have in my head to the outside world.
I think it's the ability to share your innermost feelings and thoughts with
Whatever
others.
Whatever it is that we do to express intent and achieve an impact.
Communication is the ability to express your needs, wants, frustrations, and desires to anyone that you feel needs to have that information.
Welcome to Speech Science, episode 49, and I feel like the wheels are back on the bus. We're back together. This is the second episode in a month that we're doing, so we're back to the week-to-week.
Look
we're
at
back
that.
We're back to recording on our own, so hopefully the audio troubles of the last couple of episodes are gone. Oh, it is so good to be back. Matt Hott here, joined by Michelle Wintering.
Hello.
And Michael McLeod.
What's up, buddy?
I think for the first time, all three podcast hosts are located in only a total of two states at this point.
Oh, this is true. Yeah.
It's impressive.
It's a miracle. It is a miracle. Michael McLeod,
let's start. Neighboring states, too. It's just large.
I know. We're connected. Michael, let's start with you. How is life in private practice land?
It's been good. It's been real busy. Have a lot of new families coming in from the school year. Really been going to a lot of IEP meetings and really getting pretty deeply involved in their care and their therapy and their IEPs. I have my IRB, which is really getting started and underway, which has been a couple of headaches, but we're getting there, getting to the true start of it. So things
is that
are
for the study you're doing, I believe.
Yes, for the executive function treatment model.
So yeah, can you, I know a lot of our listeners will know, but can you tell what IRB is, just so
it's
aware?
It's really an institutional review board. I spoke with several different people that were going to partner on the research, and ended up going with like a third party IRB, like a private IRB. So we're going with them, and they've been great so far. So it's been really excited to truly get started on this.
I'm excited to hear how it progresses. This is going to be cool.
It's going to be interesting.
I'm excited to get new therapy techniques to use with my kids.
That's right. I'll send it your way.
Yeah. Michelle Wintering, you are no secret. You're in Ohio right now.
Yes.
What's going on? You didn't say hi as you drove through Cincinnati.
I waved. You missed
okay,
it.
Okay. That counts. That counts. I saw it.
Well, I am. My son and I are up in Ohio getting some good grandparent and cousin time for him while my husband is traveling for the week for work. And since I'm home with maternity leave right now, it's kind of nice. We can take advantage of time with family.
That is awesome. I have spent so much time with family because I have two kids under the age of 5, and I just bought 80 X-Men and Spider-Man figures for $100, and that is my big purchase for the last week. Is that sad or is that exciting?
That
I'm
is
not,
fantastic.
I'm not sure.
That is freaking awesome. Are they like, is it like the old school ones from the 90s?
It is.
That's impressive.
And off the recording for all our listeners, Matt did tell me that I have this to look forward to with my son down the road.
Yes.
And I said, if that's all I have to spend on toys like that is $100 for a Benefit, I'm sold.
Well, Michael, I figured you would appreciate this. My biggest thing is I've always been okay spending money on action figures because I feel like that grows more language and more executive functioning skills as they are pretending to play with each other than giving them a $10 app on an iPad.
And the imaginative play that goes with it. You're absolutely right.
It's all about interpersonal relationships and meaningful experiences. That's how you build the EF skill.
My little nieces are super into, one is almost 2, so basically 2 and 4, and they're super into PJ Masks right now, which is one of those shows that the young
PJ
kids
Masks.
Love. And they have had more imaginative play with these little figurines that they got for that show than we've ever seen. It's great where they act things out and interact and tell stories, and it's great.
That's the one with Catboy and Gecko.
Oh, yes. Yep. I was asking them all the names today.
Owlette. There you
guys,
go.
You guys are good. Look at this.
Oh, yeah. No more.
My favorite part of that show is the theme song. And they're like, nighttime's the right time to fight crime. And then my favorite character's like, I can't think of a rhyme. I'm like, yep, that's the Mad Hot character on PJ Masks. Oh, let's get this thing started. Today, we're going to talk about things that parents and maybe us as special educators should know about IEPs. Brain power. How is it tied to screen time, exercise, and sleep? And can you become verbal by having your tongue-tied clip? That is the question that we'll find out. We also want to hear from you, so make sure you head to our website, podcast.speechscience.org. From there, you can email us. It is speechscience2018@gmail.com, or you can give us a phone call, 614-681-1798. You're listening to Speech Science.
Some knowledge belongs to us and us alone. The way our girlfriends walk, the way they talk, the way they touch their hair. We hold details that only a sister can know about her girls. But what about our other girls? The ones that we carry with us every day. Can we describe them when everything's right? Can we feel when something's wrong? Our bond with our sister girls gives life. But knowing your breasts can save it. You don't know what. Go to knowyourgirls.org for the facts you need on breast health. That's knowyourgirls.org, brought to you by Susan G. Komen and the Ad Council.
Okay, men, this is your time. Maybe you didn't choose this, but you're here now. You're going to go out there and be an all-star caregiver. It's up to you. So what are you gonna do? You gonna go grocery shopping? Cook, clean, be there emotionally and physically. You gotta dig deeper. Drive them to physical therapy, doctor's appointments. Don't you forget about the pharmacy. I know you won't, because that's what caregivers do. Don't give up. Don't ever give up. This is your time to show the world, your family, and yourself that you're tougher than tough. Now go out there and be the best caregiver this world has ever seen. Caregiving is tougher than tough. Find the care guides you need at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Do you have an idea for a product or book? Or are you ready to go beyond in-service presentations? Well, how do you get started? And what if you don't have any business experience at all? Well, I have some great news for you. I'm Mei-Ling Chan, and I'm getting the nitty-gritty stories from parents, teachers, therapists, advocates, and people with disabilities who have created successful businesses, and they're sharing their intimate stories with you. Listen to us on the Exceptional Leaders Podcast and fast-track creating and building and sharing your idea with the world so that you can help more people.
Welcome back to Speech Science. I'm Matt Hott. I forgot what episode we're on. Episode 49, joined in Philadelphia by Michael McLeod.
What's up?
And in Columbus this week, Michelle Wintering.
Hey.
So Michelle, you're not back in working mode yet, correct?
No. And it's debatable if I will be, because this is a pretty short for this calendar year, because this is a very short assignment for us. So I might be if I'm back in doing PRN or subbing.
But Michael, how many IEPs and ETRs have you had to sit through so far this year?
Since September?
Yeah, since September 1.
Oh, God. Probably maybe 10.
Nice. I've had 4 ETRs this week.
Not bad.
But an article out of the Detroit Free Press says 14 things parents of special education kids should know. And I figured I was going to run through these real quick and then we can see what we can add on our own. It says, ask for a draft of the IEP, jot down your questions, review the records, give the school a heads up if you're bringing a guest, such as the advocate. That would be you, right, Mike?
No, I wouldn't be an advocate. I would just be the private therapist.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And then you ask a bunch of questions. How does everyone at the know and work with my kid? How do you measure goals? What training does the staff have? How do I support the goals? Who will work with my kid? Who do I contact if I want to call another meeting? And then they say, don't sign until after you receive the final copy of the document. If you object to the IEP, put it in writing, monitor the progress, and if you have concerns, raise them. That's a pretty good list. Anything that we want to add to that or add more discussion for?
Well, I think it's always good to look at at IEP meetings. You know, I think the majority of our audience are SLPs, and looking at it in terms of from the SLP's perspective and also the family's perspective. You know, the family is always going, in a lot of the IEPs I go to, there does unfortunately tend to be a bit of a contentious atmosphere and people being very defensive. And sometimes some things that are best for the parents, the recommendations to the parents, are not always maybe the things that make it the easiest for the SLP. For instance, SLPs, the IEP getting signed right away, sometimes that is something the SLP would want because you want it to get signed so you can get started, have the goals, and things could be smooth and there could be a good positive relationship. But, you know, it really is in the best interest of the parents to not sign, take it home, look it over at outside of the meeting room, and take the time. So there's always a nice conglomerate of people at these IEP meetings, and everybody does have their own best interest in mind. Sometimes you do have to remind yourself of why you're there, and it is for the benefit of the family. And sometimes some things that are best for the parents aren't what other people would want to happen.
That is so well said.
Thank you.
And I find it interesting because I know, Michelle, in your position, do you go to IEPs as the outside therapist?
I only went to a couple as an outside therapist, but more so I had conversations with the school therapist.
Okay.
There were a few times I did that where they were contacted. They contacted me and we chatted to see how we could support each other with some of the goals. But I wasn't at the actual meeting. Now, the flip side of that was when I was at the school for the deaf and the blind, where every single child who goes to that school has an IEP. And
fair.
We were 100% IEP. So IEP was the norm. You had them every week. And a lot during the weighted times of the year, the end of the year, the beginning of the year, the midterm part of the year. What was beneficial with that is parents whose kids were there past 1 year, their first year, nothing new to them to sit in an IEP meeting. So I think in some ways, I don't want to say it was less stressful because I've talked to a lot of parents who say they absolutely dread that time of year, sitting in that meeting and learning about, quote, what their kid can't do. And I think the flip side of this list is we could look at this list as therapists and make a list for ourselves.
Yep.
Because how can we support the family so that this isn't such a dreadful thing? You know, how can we make sure so they don't have to ask for it, maybe as an SLP, even if they don't get a copy of the whole IEP, because I know sometimes they weren't together yet in time for a draft to go out early for the parent, depending if everything was compiled. But we can make sure that we send them a draft of our goals or chat with the parent about this or send something home. You know, what can we do to make that less of an intimidating thing and more empowering for parents? Because I always like to start a meeting if I was one of the main people running it by saying, look, you are the most important part of this team. Because
yep.
Other than your child, obviously, if your child's old enough to be part of this decision making as well. But you guys are with your kid. We only get them for part of their day. They're with you every night, every whatever it is that they're you're their family. You know them best. So how can we use your expertise as a parent combined with our expertise as whatever therapist or teacher or special educator we are, and come together with this. So this, and to remind them that this is not finalized, because a lot of parents see this and think this has been decided without them when they
exactly
a draft of that IEP. So I don't know, just encourage our own profession to what can we do to make this a little less stressful for parents.
And I think that's the biggest thing. Both you and Michael hit on that. It feels very contentious if anyone comes in and suggests a change. And I think our job as therapists need to be, I've always said it, that I don't, even though I work for the school district, I always feel that I need to be on the parent side. Because like with speech therapy, we're a little bit on the outside as the school clinician. Like, I don't work directly with academic skills. Directly. So if I'm working on a reading comprehension skill for a student, trying to teach them how to find main ideas, I'm going to try to generalize that by using newspaper articles or short readings from something else. So honestly, I don't have a stake in their ability to do well in history class or English class because I'm trying to teach a skill. My only thing that I want to bring up, though, and this is not directly towards you directly, Michael, but as like the, and Michelle, as an outside therapist, it's tough because in the schools, we have to work on something that is adversely affecting education that another person cannot do. So in the private therapy world, you know, I could work on vocabulary acquisition and I can work on all this, but like in the school setting, if my student can show that they can Google or use context clues to identify an unknown vocabulary word, it might not necessarily fall under speech therapy.
Yeah. Well, I also...
That's my excuse sometimes, but...
I really like this point in this list where they said, let the school know if you're bringing a guest or someone else, because I sat in a lot... I've been on both sides of the table, the outside therapist or the person who spoke to outside of the school, and also the person leading that IEP meeting. And... as a person leading an IEP meeting and you have someone else show up, it's not that I don't want them there. I do. I want to know who's working.
Depends on who it is.
Okay, that's fair. But
you bring the four-year-old little brother who's like ripping things up and tearing things off the wall. I'm like, come on, man. Like, I just want to get done with the meeting.
Yeah, true. But if you're talking about outside experts or, you know, I've had families bring an aunt who is a neuroscientist. That one was a, you know, specialist in some sort of connection to that child, like some way to advocate for that child, right? And I would love to be able to talk to that person and give them a draft of what we have, or have a conversation with them that isn't a contentious conversation of them trying to say you have to do this and us saying this is what we have and this is within the school guidelines. So if we could have that conversation before, or at least be prepped in some way for it, it's less stressful for all parties involved.
Yeah, I've definitely been invited to a few meetings where the parents did not let anyone know that I was coming. I've told them, like, let them know I'm going to be there. But it's always a very difficult situation. You know, you go in there, and obviously I'm there on behalf of the parents to advocate for the kid. But also as an SLP, I'm always going to advocate for SLPs and the profession. You know, I was the son of a teacher. My mom was a teacher for many, many years. And I've seen kids get bad grades on tests and parents yell at the teachers about the tests. And I've watching parents attack SLPs or OTs or PTs or any school staff, it's difficult and it's hard. And knowing firsthand how hard school SLPs work, with their huge caseloads and then having to do IEPs and makeup sessions, it's difficult. So I'm always there advocating for both sides, doing my best to lay the groundwork for collaboration between school team and home team. That's always my goal as an outsider.
Well, and I always find it interesting when talking to an outside speech therapist about the delivery of minutes to the student. And I was told that we are not in schools that we sometimes cannot afford to give the Cadillac of services. We're giving the Chevy of services. And I'm not sure how I like that phrasing, but it does hit a little bit differently because, like, for example, Michael, if you're working with an executive functioning student after school, they could meet you, what, two or three times a week for 30 or 45 minutes? Is that about right?
A private client?
Yeah.
Yeah, they can come as often as I of course, make my clinical recommendation, but because it's private services, parents can really have them come as much as they want.
Am I close? Is that a pretty typical 2 to 3 times a week?
No, it's actually usually just once a week.
Okay. Where with me for pulling my kids, sometimes I can, you know, it's okay. Can I pull this kid for 30 minutes and miss 15 minutes of each class? And is it worth me pulling them to teach them this skill versus what they're missing in the classroom setting? Or do I push into the classroom setting and then there's a whole different fiasco? I think it's interesting when we talk about minutes and delivery from school versus outside of school.
Yeah, that's always what I've seen so far is parents coming into the IEPs. Typically, they have a list of things that they're not so happy with. Number one being frequency of service.
Yep.
Location of service. Is it grouped or individual? The level of prompting for each goal, and sometimes even just the wording of the goal. Not even the therapy techniques or the strategies. Sometimes it's just the basic wording of the goal. So, you know, it's a very, very sensitive subject with when you're talking about your child, especially a child with special needs. So it certainly makes sense for it to be as sensitive and contentious as it is, but in a perfect world, everybody would be flexible and there. But we certainly, there are definitely some improvements that can be made to the system. And that's what the Smarter Steps team is doing. Kelly Ott and Laura Wakefield. Yep. If you want to Google them, smarterstep.com, they're really doing a great job for IEP advocacy.
We'll put a link in the show notes. But I want to hear from you guys at home. podcast.speechscience.org or phone call 614-681-1798 or email us speechscience2018@gmail.com. We're still on Twitter, #speechscience. Changing gears just a little bit. Surprise, surprise, kids' brain power is tied to the amount of sleep, amount of exercise, and how much screen time they are getting. This is coming out of the New York Times of September 26th. They're saying, guess what? You should probably be doing exercise for about an hour, sleeping 9 to 11 hours, and only 2 hours or less of screen time.
Per day. So can we just do the quick math on that, right? So let's say the kid sleeps, we'll just say the average 9 to 11, 10 plus 60 minutes of physical activity, that's 11 12. Hours. Plus 2 hours of recreational screen, no more than 2 hours. So let's say up to 2 hours.
Say 2 hours.
Okay. So that's how much out of their day?
13 hours?
Right.
14 hours?
13 hours out of a 24-hour day, plus they're in school for 8 hours.
Say eight?
8 hours.
I mean, we're up to...
That gives them 2 hours to do playtime or something else.
Yeah,
that's not bad.
I mean, it's not bad, but I guess my first thought when I saw this article is that, one, sleep, I think, is tied to everything for everyone in all of life, from the day you're born until the day you die, that your health and physical well-being, as well as our ability to function and our ability to do so much is tied to adequate sleep. And there's been research that you see pop up every now and then on increased obesity rates and other issues when you're lacking sleep. That long-term lack of sleep, I mean, that's a form of torture for people. So I don't know. I love that this stuff comes out because I think it's so important, and it's so hard for our kids to be at their best if they're not getting adequate sleep. And screen time, excessive screen time makes that hard.
They need time for Roblox and Minecraft. So,
Spider-Man, the new video game.
Spider-Man.
The new Spider-Man game is made by a video game company called Insomnia.
Who is surprised?
So the game has actually been nicknamed So like when they nickname games, they usually just call it like Rockstar Batman or Telltale Games Red Dead Redemption, you know, just kind of like who makes it. So it's just Insomnia Spider-Man, and I'm not sure that's the wrong title.
Yeah, it keeps people up, that's for sure.
But okay, so this is how I explain executive like processing and functioning. And Michael, you can please correct me when I get it wrong. But I always try to explain it to parents and then also my adult patients that if you think of like your brain's ability to do something as like a jug of water, like a gallon of water, and we all have about the same gallon of water, but everything you have to do are cups of different sizes, your brain tries to fill them up in the order that keeps us alive the most. And unfortunately, language and word finding and all that are usually the last cups to get filled. So if you're so fatigued that you can't keep your attention up, that cup is going to get bigger in doing that. But how does video game time affect all of that? And am I way off on my model?
I usually describe it as a as an air traffic controller, someone who's directing all of the airplanes in at the right times. Everything has to work together there at the right time. So obviously, if you're fatigued or playing video games, the airplanes are not going to come in on time, and your jugs of water are not going to be filled.
But okay, so what does video games do realistically to brain power? I mean.
Well, the biggest thing is just that it gives them that dopamine drip. It gives them that instant satisfaction. The thing with these EF, these executive functions and ADHD kids, they run to video games. They have a major tendency to have video game addiction. And that's because these EF and ADHD kids have zero concept of time management and zero concept to be able to forecast themselves into the future and recognize the future. Video games are very structured. You know what's coming. You know what you're doing. It's a learned environment. It's repetition. So playing that game gives them that brain pleasure. It doesn't overtax their brain. It allows them to keep going, quick fix. Like games like Fortnite. You play Fortnite. As soon as you die, you restart. You're right back at it. So it's just constant refix. It's a constant pleasure stimulator. And that's why homework is
getting that dopamine hit, right?
Exactly. And that's why homework is so hard for them, because you can have a piece of homework where any of us could say, oh, this will take 15 minutes. For them, they have no concept of time. They'll look at it and say, this will take me 3 hours. I'm not even going to start it.
Oh.
So it's the ability to initiate a non-preferred task and recognize how much time something's going to take. So video games are very predictable. So being able to initiate, it's a preferred task, so initiation is not an issue. And they get stuck on them. It's hard for them to stop thinking about them or stop playing them because of the consistent pleasure they're getting from the predictable course.
So is that why, and like this is true, honest, hand on a Bible, true. Like if I get really sucked into one of the games I really like, start to play it after the kids go to bed at, you know, 9 o'clock, 9:30. And I could not even think it's been an hour, but look down and it's 3:34 in the morning.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Cause you were so distracted. You were so drawn into the game that you were the concept of time, the concept of passing time completely went out the window. And that's
gotta be. Oh, sorry. Sorry, Mike.
I was just gonna say that's how it is with these teenagers. You know, they come home from school, they're already fatigued from school, and they have a list of homework to do, and they're not thinking about homework at all. And any punishment that comes along with not doing their homework also doesn't matter because they're lost in the game.
That's gotta be similar to. I mean, I remember. If I was really, you ever been really engrossed in reading a book and you don't even hear people around you or they say your name and it takes them 3 times saying it before they catch your attention. And then also like Las Vegas casinos, right? They're made with no windows and no clock and you're engrossed in a game getting dopamine hit or hoping for that dopamine hit. And before you know it, you're leaving at 4 in the morning. Because you have no concept of time passing.
I will say that it is kind of, I'm a pretty sure I'm a cognitively put together 32-year-old male.
Yeah, you're for the and most part.
No. For the most part. And I make sure, like, if it, the only time I really sit down to lose myself in a game is like when my wife will take the boys out to see her family out in Pittsburgh. And I have a weekend where I, you know, I'll work on Saturday and I know I don't do anything on Sunday. But it is kind of terrifying to sit down at 6 o'clock and say, okay, I'm going to try to beat this game. And then all of a sudden, you know, it's literally 3 or 4 in the morning and you go, oh my gosh, I got to get up at 8 to mow the grass. What just happened? And that's scary from a cognitively put together adult. I can't imagine from a high school student with an executive functioning disorder or just as a teenager.
And we do that too as functioning adults when we binge on Netflix for a season of whatever the show is, you know,
Daredevil, Punisher, Jessica Jones.
I mean, I think we have a lot of examples of that, and maybe that can be used as an example when we're talking about how executive functioning affects kids, but all of us.
Exactly.
Well, we want to hear from you. How many hours a day do you play video games, or
binge
do you not
Netflix.
Let maybe you binge Netflix, or maybe you have kids, or maybe you're trying to fight it like Michael is doing the good fight. Head to our website, podcast.speechscience.org, or email us, speechscience2018@gmail.com, or give us a phone call, 614-681-1798.
So earlier, you guys were talking about Netflix. Have you guys seen the new show, Magic for Humans?
Yes.
No, I have no idea what we're talking about right now.
It's the best
so
show
good.
Ever.
Yeah, what is it?
Sorry, go ahead, Mike.
It's pretty much the greatest magician in the history of magic. He is amazing. No, I think his name is Justin Willman, I think.
Okay.
Justin Willman, he's like a younger guy. He just does these he does these magic tricks that are just so out of the ordinary and so different.
Okay.
Like he does this one thing where he has this string attached to like a glass bottle, and he throws the glass bottle in the water, and he takes this girl's cell phone, chucks it in the water, and then pulls the string on the glass bottle, and the girl's phone is in the bottle. Makes no sense.
It's crazy. And he does kind of mind tricks with people too, where he set up a whole scenario to make someone think that they became invisible.
What?
And it's not
executive
awesome.
Functioning.
I know. I think it ties right into executive functioning, trying to figure out how he's doing these things.
Literally makes no sense. If you YouTube him, like just YouTube Magic for Humans, you'll find like some of the best clips.
All right, I'm going to have to do that. Speaking of things that are unbelievable, a Texas boy had his tongue tie clip and went from nonverbal to verbal. Is this possible?
I was wondering the same thing. I have so many questions looking at this article because I want to know how they're defining nonverbal and verbal, first of all, because, you know, was he just not clear in his speech or not trying to speak because he couldn't move his tongue in the right way? And then I'm also just thinking how many people saw this kid, if it really was that severe, and to where he could not talk.
Well, here is the Inside Edition. If I've got this played right, we will be able to listen. Hold on, let me do this again. Share computer sound. Here's the Inside Edition 2-minute wrap up.
Because the more you can do, the stronger.
Everyday conversation wasn't something that came naturally to 6-year-old Mason Mott. He's been in speech therapy since he was a year old.
Nothing was really working. You know, he had probably a 5-word vocabulary and we were just looking at alternative means of communication.
Mason was diagnosed with Sotos syndrome, which caused him to have distinctive facial features and learning disabilities. But it didn't quite explain why he couldn't speak. Until a trip to the dentist revealed Mason was biologically tongue-tied.
When you're in utero and you're a mom, you have webbed fingers and webbed toes. When you're developing, your tongue is part of the floor of your mouth, and it separates similarly through the same process. And a tongue tie is simply an incomplete separation.
Mason's dentist caught the issue during a checkup and fixed it. His mom says the results were immediate.
We took him home that evening, and then he started talking about, I'm hungry, I'm thirsty. Can we watch a movie? Like, blowing our minds with these full sentences for the first time within, you know, 7-8 hours of coming home, and just, like, it was just shocking.
Mason is still going through speech therapy, but the procedure has also improved his life in other ways. His mom and doctor say he no longer has problems sleeping or choking while he's eating.
And he's just vibrant, and he sleeps well, and he's just precious and a joy, and it's wonderful to be a part of seeing that transformation and being a part of that transformation for him.
Mason's mom says she's glad she kept working to find him the help he needed, and urges other parents to be persistent in seeking medical advice.
They should trust their gut instinct about their child, and if you think that something is going on, doctors may tell you one thing, but keep looking and keep trying, because you're usually right. You know your child best.
For InsideEdition.com, I'm Mara Montalbano.
So that's courtesy of Inside Edition and Yahoo News. I hate to be the skeptical one, and I'm always the one raining on the parade. We didn't hear him talk in the 2-minute video.
I was kind of hoping we would as well. Now, I mean, like I said, I want to know what they mean by nonverbal. And did it just mean that it was easier for him to talk at this point? But it obviously, the way the mom was talking and the way the therapist, or I forget who that other woman was.
She was the pediatric dentist, the one that found the tongue clip.
Okay, so
tongue
she tie. Did the release on the mm-hmm. tongue tie. They said he had a laser release as well, which is what we just did with my son. And I will say, my first other thought with this, another thought I had, my second thought, my first other thought. What? I am tired. I'm sorry.
1B, 1B.
This is my first other thought. Is that this is a quick reminder for us as SLPs that as part of an initial eval, we should do an oral motor screen.
Good call.
I think too often we forget that. And it's really easy. I've been in a school where I have to do those rapid fire evaluations. You only have a brief time to qualify someone or not. And especially with articulation, or if you're looking at feeding and you're in a clinic somewhere or private practice, is we have to look and see if there's an anatomical factor in a kid's ability to make motor speech sounds or motor patterns for swallowing.
And you gotta love podcasting, where we can stop because our audio has stopped and we couldn't hear each other. Michelle, you were saying something about oral motor.
Oh, yeah, I know. I was doing really well on my role talking while I thought you guys were still there. Anyways, no, my point I was making is that something else this article made me think of is, as screeners, as SLPs, while we're looking at a kid or looking at an adult, we need to remember to look in their mouth. I think sometimes it's easy to forget as we're going through a standardized test or a quick other screener and checking things off. Is there an anatomical factor? And, if they look for the overt stuff, we're not going to catch everything, but we should have a kid stick their tongue out, move their tongue around, open their mouth, do simple things. If they're being tested for articulation or ability to speak or different sounds that they're supposed to be making.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I totally agree, especially if you have someone who's mostly nonverbal and is having such difficulty, you would think at some point this young boy was given an oral motor exam. It's
who was being seen by a speech therapist.
Exactly. So it seems to me, obviously I only know what the article says and what that video said, but it seems like someone dropped the ball at some point. This is something maybe at the graduate level, we have to push more for the oral motor exam. Because what is it? Maybe a week, 2 weeks where you're really...
I think it gets missed a lot.
Yeah.
A lot of assessments and screeners and a lot of I've been in a clinic with different programs, pre-programs, forms that we fill out. Some of them have a section for oral motor, some of them don't. And even the ones that do, often people, you know, check without necessarily going through what that all is. And I know there's times that I haven't as well. And I was fortunate to have a clinical supervisor in a school who we had a girl, not as severe as this boy, but a 7-year-old who had been in speech therapy since she was in kindergarten and still in, I think she was 8 or 9 at that point, still could not produce a couple specific sounds. And my supervisor, a few months before I got there, did an oral motor eval on her and said she has a severe tongue tie. And they released it. And within 3 months, she was out of speech therapy. So
yep. I always get pushback because on my, not pushback, but on my ETRs, I have different segments: hearing, fluency, voice, pragmatics, vocabulary, language. And then I have oral motor. And, you know, I always tell the parents, I'm like, yeah, I just kind of quickly looked into the your student's mouth to make sure everything is the way it's supposed to be. And these are high school kids. And the parents look at me like, what could you possibly be looking for? And I'm like, ah, just make sure everything's there. I've caught a couple really high ridges, but nothing big. I do want to note that in the article, Dr. Amy Ludeman-Lazar, the dentist, she says, we did detect a tongue tie. Mason was not nonverbal. He was just unable to speak. He had been in speech therapy and no one had ever checked under his tongue. Oops.
Oh, wow.
Ugh. Well, what do you do for oral motor exams in the school or anywhere else we want to know? Head over to our website, podcast.speechscience.org, or email us, speechscience2018@gmail.com, or give us a phone call, 614-681-1798. All right, coming up after the break, how steady is your relationship in video games? You're listening to Speech Science. Hey guys, it's called forward selling.
How steady is your relationship?
Nice.
All right. In 3, 2, 1. Welcome back to Speech Science, episode 49. I'm Matt Hott, joined by Michael McLeod.
Hello.
And Michelle Wintering.
Hey, Matt.
Hello. All right. So you guys heard of Football Widows. Well, now there are Fortnite Divorcees. How strong is your relationship? Can it withstand 8 hours of video games or Fortnite? Evidently, 200 couples in the United Kingdom have filed for divorce in 2018 alone, citing the addiction to the online survival game Fortnite.
Okay, I had only first heard of Fortnite, and maybe I am just in the dark when it comes to video games, but about 6 or 7 months ago.
It's been popular now for a good maybe year and a half.
Okay, yeah. So I'm not too far behind.
No.
Just checking.
200 UK couples cited Fortnite and other online games when they filed divorce petitions with Divorce Online. This still only represents a small fraction of the total number of divorce proceedings the company have said. Roughly 5% have been because of video games.
I get a kick out of the fact that, you know, our world is so online based that there's divorce online, by the way.
Nobody ever got divorced over Mario or Zelda. Just going to throw that out there.
You know what? Well, you guys discuss this. I'm going to look this up.
Yeah,
Mario,
you gonna see if anyone
Mario Kart divorce.
Maybe over Smash Brothers, but not Mario.
Let's see.
I think Mario would be bonding.
That's true. Love story.
Nope. The only articles are they have almost gotten divorced over losing at the last minute with like one of those shells in Mario Kart. So there you go.
That was probably Rainbow Road. So that makes sense.
Yeah, Rainbow. Yeah. You know what, though? It kind of goes back to what we talked about earlier. Is this all just executive functioning problems in adults too, that they can't figure out how long they're playing a video game for? Says the guy who forgets that he plays video games till 4 a.m.
Sounds like marriage problem.
Fair enough.
it's just this game has just reached new levels. This is like it's like Pokemon Go was, but times 50 and over a much longer period of time. So it's just like I was saying before, it's one of those games where you play it, you lose or you win, but as soon as you lose, you're able to restart and join another battle instantly. So people who love this game and play this game play it for hours and hours and hours. So obviously, if you're playing a game, you're neglecting your spouse.
Hey, it all comes down to communication, guys.
That's right.
And what is that Cool Hand Luke? We've quoted him in quoted that movie in a podcast before.
What
we have here is a failure to communicate.
Ah,
is that Lucas Stewart?
No, that is Cool Hand Luke, the movie. Do you know that old prison movie? But I think Luke was the only one who got my reference last time.
He did.
Of course.
Well, no, and you were talking about video games and possibly the marriage issues, and maybe it's relationship issues and a lack of communication. Have you seen the Easter egg in the new Insomniac Spider-Man video game that I was talking about earlier?
Tell us, Matt.
So this guy, Tyler Schultz, he tweeted Insomniac asking for help proposing to his girlfriend. He asked them if he could put an Easter egg into the video game, and on the marquee over a movie theater, they wrote, "Maddie, will you marry me?" Because he said, quote, they played video games all the time together. So he was going to swing Spider-Man over there and show her the marquee and whip out a ring. Well, they broke up about a month before the video game came out. And she said, quote, Maddie in question gave a statement. Our relationship turned into a mother and son relationship where I had to remind him about things. I had to deal with his financial mistakes, his violent outbursts, etc. I just would watch him play video games. Divorce? Fortnite, Spider-Man for broken engagements. So there you go.
Oh, well, that's a sad note to end on.
It certainly is.
It could be worse.
Sorry, listeners.
It could be worse.
I'm assuming most of our audience is female, correct?
Well, on the fact that our field is 96.5% female, I would guess yes.
Statistically.
So if you meet a guy who's playing Fortnite, you need to run.
Yeah, do not let him. Anyways.
Hey, everyone. Let's all stop what we're doing right now and take a moment. That felt good, huh? Just like that, we had a nice special sort of moment together. Of course, they don't all need to be quiet moments to be special. They could be loud moments, goofy moments, sporty moments, dorky moments. Moments where we talk or walk or just hang out. It doesn't really matter. They all count. Because every time dads like us take a moment like that to spend with our kids, well, it's pretty momentous. Sounds like somebody agrees. So let's take a moment to make a moment. Today, call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
As humans, we ask ourselves all kinds of questions. But what if we were forced to ask ourselves a question every day that affected the outcome of the most basic things, the most important things in our lives? The question is, what is your sexual orientation or gender identity? And the answer is the difference between keeping your job or getting fired. The answer is the difference between staying in your home or getting evicted. The answer is the difference between receiving medical treatment or not. Because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against people based on their answer to this question. LGBT Americans have the right to say, "I do," but they don't have the same basic rights as everyone else. Get the facts at beyondido.org. Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
What do you guys got coming up over the next couple of days, week?
I'm hanging out with family this weekend for the long holiday weekend, which is an interesting holiday, but that's a discussion for another day.
Fair enough.
Yeah. And I am doing the same.
Are you really?
That's just relaxing, nice. Taking it easy.
I have another IEP and ETR meeting all scheduled up for this next week, so that's what I'm doing. Yep. All right. Our opening... Welcome to... Oh, I'll be playing with new X-Men figures. That's what I'll be doing. All right. Our opening music is Please Listen Carefully by Jazar. It's licensed under an attribution and share alike license. Our bump music is The Temperature of the Air on the Bow of the Calatine by Chris Zabrinsky. And our closing music is The Slow Burn by Kevin MacLeod. They're both licensed under an attribution and share alike license. Gonna edit that out. For just
We're
coughing,
not.
No big deal.
Just leave that, it.
That might be in there now. For Michael MacLeod, and Michelle Wintering. I'm Matt Hott. I almost said Michelle Wintering. I almost said that. For Michael MacLeod, Michelle Wintering, I'm Matt Hott. In the immortal words of Janice Wright, be a willow, because the willow can bend under pressure and return to form. The mighty oak looks nice, but it will crack under pressure. Peace out. See you guys next week.
Bye.
Holy smokes, guys.
We did it.
I thought for a second you were about to mess up the willow tree quote, too.
You're listening to the Exceptional Podcast Network.